The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP.
Bottle of wine, fruit of the vine. When you gonna let me get sober? Let me go home and start over.
Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio. Brought to you in part by Recovery Centers of America, the nationally recognized leader in drug and alcohol treatment, using proven evidence-based treatment, including 24/7 medically supervised detox, inpatient and outpatient options. You'll receive exceptional care from an expert team of master-level clinicians, physicians, nurses, and staff using 12-step methodology and medications. Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825, and Acadia Healthcare, with locations on the East Coast. Acadia maintains a standard for excellence in the treatment of behavioral health and addiction concerns. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Hendler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. Mark, good afternoon. What's new this week in recovery news?
Oh, we got a lot of news coming in. One of the news clips right now is about the self-proclaimed best drunk driver ever is accused of killing two state troopers on I-95 in Philadelphia. A lot of people have heard this story.
Yeah, it's a terrible story. That's one of the effects of addiction, alcohol, or drugs. She's killed three people.
Yes.
And her life and everybody else's life involved in this will never, ever be the same.
I know. And you know, it's Janiyah Webb, 21 years old. I mean, only 21 years old, and there goes your life.
That's right.
I mean, and these poor guys, she went right up the side of the road. She might have been going up to 110 miles per hour when she hit them, along with another innocent victim.
This is like the ultimate horrific result of an addiction.
It is, and a lot of it could have been us, right? I mean, I know I used to drive under the influence.
Absolutely.
And some of the decisions we make when we're young.
Absolutely. What else you have?
Okay, the second thing we have is out of Collier County, Florida. A Florida man is found with drugs after getting trapped in a porta potty. I mean, could you imagine? The deputy was able to get the man out of the bathroom and identified him as 34-year-old James Goose. Deputy said Goose told them he had gotten his foot stuck in the door, and he was actually yelling in the porta potty, like, "Let me out, let me out, let me out." And, you know, but he tested positive for fentanyl and had a syringe and, you know, but could you imagine?
Well, you know, I'm sure that his brain was quite altered when he went into that bathroom. So I guess the joke's on him.
The joke's on him. But I mean, the next day he had to be like, I can't believe it.
You know, did that ever happen to you?
No, it did not happen to me. But I really try not to go into porta potties.
Absolutely not.
I mean, they don't know what you're going to find in there.
They remind me of day camp. And I don't go into porta potties.
Oh, my gosh. They're the worst.
Yeah. What else
you think? So we got some more bad news about the pandemic. What they're finding is a new study came out where alcohol-related deaths increased by 25%. In 2020, deaths jumped from about 79,000 a year to 99,000 a year, spike seen across all drinking age groups.
And what year was that?
That was in 2020.
So it's too early to get the figures for 2021.
Yes, and this was really aimed at seeing what effects the pandemic had. And so many people were drinking. I mean, this goes across the board. Some of it's liver issues that people passed away from and other medical issues. Right. So it's just another sign of how bad things got during the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly didn't help the situation. Okay, so listen, we're going to go to our first break. And when we come back, we have an incredibly interesting guest, Judge Todd Eisenberg, Common Pleas Court, outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And we're going to find out what it's like to actually be a judge and sit on the bench. It should be quite interesting.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campuses in Devon, PA, and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7. And because it's local and in-network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY. Recovery today.
Hey, it's Bobby Hart from Voice and Heart, and you're listening to Clean and Sober on WWDB 860.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Heard on these great radio stations across America, WWDB out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, WWNN out of West Palm Beach, Florida, KDWN out of Las Vegas, Nevada, WHFS out of Tampa, Florida, and WGAC out of Augusta, Georgia.
Carrying the message, Gary.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, Judge Todd Eisenberg, welcome to the show, Clean and Sober.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Sure. And Monica,
we've been waiting.
Corny,
you got it.
Thank you so much for bringing the judge.
I'm glad to do it.
You know, we really appreciate you calling in and having him come over because, you know, the audience, we had a lot of response from last night when we put the show out. And I think people are generally curious about what it's like to be a judge and how do you become a judge. And, you know, my feeling always is, I'm jumping ahead of myself, is what's it like to have – Judge, I'm going to ask you this now. What is it like to have somebody's fate in your hands?
It's an interesting question that you're starting with. What is it like to have somebody's fate in your hands? And, you know, it's a heavy burden that you carry as a judge. You know, I remember years back I heard somebody say about the importance of a judge. With the stroke of a pen, I can take away your house, I can take away your liberty, and if a jury makes a determination, I can take away your life.
Yeah.
So it is a heavy burden placed upon us. If we make mistakes, as I see you have the Pennsylvania court structure there, there are error-correcting courts. Appellate courts, the Superior Court for criminal and family in most civil cases, the Commonwealth Court generally for cases that involve municipalities, and then the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. But they don't – the things that happen at the Court of Common Pleas level, the trial level, are very important. And it's a great burden, a heavy burden to have upon us. And every day I go in there and I try to do what I think is the best and treat everybody with respect.
Yeah, that's what it is. You know, I just want to give a little background. You grew up outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I know that your mom passed when you were very young, and your paternal grandfather played a very big role in upbringing and giving you your value system, which you take to the courtroom, which, you know, it was honesty. I mean, just all the great attributes that somebody can have.
Yes. Well, it wasn't just my paternal grandfather. It was my paternal grandmother as well.
Okay.
Very much raised by my paternal grandparents who stepped in to help my father out when my mother died. And really they played a key role, and it wasn't much – they were of a generation where, you know, they didn't show a lot of affection or things like that, but you just saw how they treated other people.
Yes.
And you took that and you understood the importance of how, if you can, you reach down and you help somebody and you make sure you're doing the right thing. And they never said this, but, you know, what's the saying about character? It's what you do when people aren't looking.
Yes.
And how important that is. And charity. And my paternal grandfather was a rabbi. And he had – well, he did both two things. He was an optometrist and a rabbi. I don't think he was able to make enough money as a rabbi, so he was also an optometrist. But he had a sign up in his office downstairs. I don't even know why he had it. But it's from the Hebrew Bible that is in Hebrew, tzedek tzedek tirdof, which in English means justice thou shalt pursue. And it always was something that was indelibly marked upon me, that is what we are supposed to do, all of us, no matter what we do. Justice is what we need to pursue. And I made a promise and I know you said you're going to ask this question, how you become a judge.
Yeah.
But when I ran for the Court of Common Pleas back in 2015, I made the promise that if I did get elected, that every day I would make sure that I ensue that justice is pursued upon. And honestly, 6 years in now, look, have I made mistakes? Sure. But not for any reason by then I just got it wrong.
Yeah.
That every day I go in and I make sure that I'm trying to do the best and make sure that people leave the courtroom feel like they got justice. They might not agree with me.
Right.
But sure. They justice.
And so the checks and balances system of the court is there's an appeal process. If either the defendant doesn't feel that you made the right decision or I guess for a variety of reasons, but there is it's not – is it ever over in your courtroom?
Well, I mean, the way you were speaking is I assume you're generally referencing criminal courts.
Yeah.
In the civil and family courts, anybody can appeal, the plaintiff or the defendant. In the criminal court, if the defendant loses, they can appeal. If, say, a jury finds somebody not guilty, or if there's a bench trial and I find somebody not guilty, that can't be appealed. That's finality. But if a defendant is convicted and they feel that I did something wrong, evidentiary rulings, etc., they have the right to appeal it to the Pennsylvania Superior Court, which is required to take all the appeals. If a person is not happy with what the Superior Court is, they can then ask the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to hear the case, but that's discretionary.
Yeah.
So, a lot of things end, but you have a right to appeal.
So your upbringing, was that an influence of why you decided to go into the field of law?
I mean, I think in the end it did play a role, but as we were talking before we got started, originally I wanted to do what you're doing now. I wanted to be in the broadcast media industry.
And I'd love to be a judge.
Maybe we can trade.
We can switch.
Right. I really wanted to be in television news, preferably in sports, because that's what I grew up really enjoying. I studied communications. We were talking earlier. I interned at WPVI for a couple of years when I was in college. I was on the college television station. When I got out of college, I was this close to taking a job at a major sports network in Connecticut. But I decided, you know, that really wasn't where – I didn't want to – the thought of moving around every couple of years and kind of having no consistency was – because I had a friend who was a couple of years older than me who had been doing it, and I saw how his life was going. And, you know, in the end it was good because who would have ever predicted in 1994 what media would look like today? I mean, nobody could have ever predicted this. Yeah. I mean – we had three stations and it was a few cable stations. That's
3, 6, 10.
Yeah. I mean, that was before. I mean, by the mid-90s, we had cable.
Well, that's all we had, I can tell you.
Right. But who would have thought that it's nothing like it used to be. So.
Yeah. We have a sports guy that comes on here occasionally, Don Tollefson.
Oh, sure. He was one of the guys I grew up watching all the time.
Yeah,
him,
yeah.
Al Meltzer.
Yeah.
See those guys. Then I was like a lot of people who thought, well, oh my God, what am I going to do with my life? Well, I always like to argue with people, so we'll go to law school. And I went, graduated, and then I started out as a public defender in Philadelphia back in the late 90s. And, you know, as a kid coming out of suburban Cheltenham, what I would call, for lack of a better term, a sheltered existence, mm-hmm. to go see what it was like in inner city Philadelphia, having to go to the police stations at Front and Westmoreland, 55th and Pine, 615 East Girard Avenue, even Academy and Red Lion Road. I know Broad and Champ Lost. I'm just going through them, but to see what was going on and the poverty, and it really was an eye opener for somebody like me.
Did you feel fortunate that you didn't? When you saw these horrible situations, fortunate that you weren't brought up in that. And you were, I'm not going to say privileged, but you know, I think all of us sitting around here had a pretty good childhood compared to some of the horrific things that you hear about in the large urban cities.
Sure. No, absolutely. I would say privilege compared to – although I – you know, some might say I got dealt a bad blow. But I always knew that where I was going to be, I always knew that I had stable parental-like support, never worried about where the next meal was coming from.
Yeah.
Where it would then force me to then get involved in things that probably weren't in my best interest.
So you did undergraduate at I don't know what school, but
Boston University.
Boston, okay, BU.
Yep.
We're on Commonwealth Avenue?
It's the only place it goes.
Commonwealth Avenue.
That's where I
live. The zoo.
It at the time, it might have changed. I lived in a dorm called Warren Towers, which was the largest non-military installation in the country. So
really?
There were three 20-story – I think there were 20-story – 20-story dorms all in one kind of group. And it was very zoo-like to use your term.
Well, that's why I remember seeing it's 700 and somebody put a line under it on Commonwealth Avenue. It was the zoo. But so, okay, undergrad. Did you know in your undergraduate that you were going to pursue a law degree?
No, as I was saying before, I was going to go into communications. I originally wanted to go into medical school. I wanted to be in medicine, but you know, organic chemistry, trigonometry, those things kind of got in the way. And I thought to myself, all right, well, I really need to do better in school. So what's the way to go? So I went into communications. And so I did that, and I really thought that was where I was going to be, and it didn't work out. But and that's fine. And, you know, practicing law has been one of the greatest things, the decision to make, and to get to interact with different people over the years, because one of the things I said when I was running, and I would still say now, is that one of the great things I think I brought to the bench was all the different types of law I practiced. I started out as a public defender. I then did private kind of criminal, family, some personal injury. I then did zoning and municipal work.
Wow.
After that. And then I represented a utility company for the last 6 years before I took the bench. So I understood the ability to deal with people who would not like what I decided because I represented at times defendants, I represented municipalities, and I represented the utility company. So,
but those defendants were basically corporate defendants. So I'm assuming that the what do you want to say? If it's the you know, when you're dealing with people as defendants, it's a more charged situation, isn't it?
Well, yeah, yes and no. I mean, I remember when I was doing municipal work and the municipality or somebody wanted to bring some sort of use in that nobody was happy with, those could get pretty charged up. But, yeah, it's always more personal when it's one-on-one.
Yeah.
And you look at a person. Like in a case, if it's a criminal case, you have a victim there, you have a defendant here. There's personal interactions that take place.
You know, Judge, Mark and I are fascinated with prisons for some reason. And you had mentioned one that I was in. It wasn't approved, 55th and Pine several times.
Sure.
Okay, in the old days. But we have this, Mark and I have a fascination.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, and we're just very fortunate that we didn't end up in prison a long time, right?
There's no question about it. I mean you brought up that news story about that woman. I'm not saying it was her first mistake, but it's her last mistake.
Yes. Yes, it could have been either one of us. And, you know, I was curious about, as a public defendant, when you get somebody where you know they're totally guilty.
Sure.
And as a public defendant, I guess part of the job is you're defending this person either way. Was that hard for you to when you knew somebody was super guilty and maybe they did some kind of heinous crime? Was it hard to defend them?
No, it was not hard because I look at it this way. We have a system and everybody has to work within the system. And the only way the system works is if a person gets a vigorous defense. Because remember, just because you're charged with the crime doesn't mean you committed the crime. That you can be charged, but it's still the burden of the Commonwealth to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, That's a question that all jurors always ask. What is a reasonable doubt? And we have to give the response, a reasonable doubt is the type of doubt that would cause a reasonable person the ability to pause or hesitate when making – and I'm going off the top of my head here, so
it's pretty
anybody
good.
Out
it's
there, you get it wrong.
It is. Yeah.
A reasonable doubt is a type of doubt that makes a person pause or hesitate when making a decision of importance in their own personal life. It's a pretty high burden. You know, if you look at it in a numeric value, they talk about the lowest burden, which is more likely than not, which is 50.1%, which is the civil burden. Generally, if you get in a car accident – and you're claiming somebody's negligent, they have to show by 50.1% that you're negligent, not a high burden. Above that is clear and convincing evidence for certain things. That's a higher burden. The highest burden we have is beyond a reasonable doubt, which is probably, I've heard, say, about 80 to 90%. But remember, it's not beyond all doubt. It's only beyond a reasonable doubt. So to answer your question in a long-winded way, yeah, personally, sometimes you could look at it and say, oof. But you always knew you were fighting for a more important thing. You're fighting for the system, the Constitution. Remember, the Constitution is set up in ways that you don't have to incriminate yourself. You have the right against illegal search and seizure. They have to get 12 people to sit in a box and determine your guilt or innocence. These are all very, very, very important facets of our system. So... But, you know, the lessons I took from that office were more. It was just really seeing different people, seeing how the system works, and seeing how the system has changed in 24 years.
Yeah, that brings me into a question I would like to ask you, Judge. How – and we're going to – well, we have a couple more minutes. And of course, Monica, we're going to bring you into this when we come back from the break.
Yeah,
the
Monica is the one who brought me here.
Yes,
so, we need
so
to bring
she's
her in.
You're guilty, okay? Has the let me phrase this way. It feels to me, it seems to me that the attitude of the legal system has changed in recent years regarding addiction and sentencing. Is that fair to say, Judge?
What I would say is that I have noticed a big difference regarding addiction in the years since I started practice to where I am now as a judge. I don't think when I started that there was an understanding of addiction like there is today.
Yeah.
And that merely just because you're an addict – well, let's go back for a second. You and I talked about this before I came in here, that really what is the reason why we have punishment? We have it for a bunch of reasons. One is in the name, punishment. You do something wrong, we have to punish you. Two is deterrence, specific deterrence and general deterrence. General being, you want the people at large to know if you commit a robbery, you might go to jail. Are you getting the –
I'm getting 1 minute. It's fine.
Okay. Specific.
We're good.
Specific deterrence, meaning that this person now knows that if I commit the crime again, they're going to get in trouble. And lastly, rehabilitation. And I think that people have come to the realization that the importance of rehabilitation and addiction is something people cannot control. And merely sending them to jail is not the way to deal with it, or not the only way to deal with it.
Right. And we talk about that a lot on the show. All right. So let's do this. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, if you have any questions – I'm looking at the screen like I'm talking to somebody. The audience, any questions? If you'd like to talk to the judge, find out what it's like to be a judge, how do you become a judge, what it feels like to become a judge, what are the incredible qualities of becoming a judge, all sorts of stuff, and we'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Huntington Creek Recovery Center is Eastern Pennsylvania's premier provider of transformative care for individuals whose lives have been impacted by addiction. Our 40-acre campus offers a tranquil, recovery-focused environment. We specialize in evidence-based care that addresses the effects of trauma and offer a unique program specifically for adolescent males. Huntington Creek Recovery Center can help you achieve lasting sobriety. Call us today at 844-948-8255. 2320.
Hey, man, this is Ricky Bird, former member of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, an inductee to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as of 2015. And I listen to Clean and Sober Radio, and so do my friends here, right?
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, if you're in need of help, you can call us now at 1-888-329-3306 or call the U.S. Substance Abuse and Mental Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357. Mark and I always say on the show, there is no drive-thrus for recovery. There's no delivery services, but there are plenty of opportunities and resources out there to get help. So take advantage of it.
And never give up. I see it all the time as a counselor where somebody keeps on working at it and they get clean eventually.
That's right.
It's the biggest thing.
And that's my beef with the insurance companies. They only pay a couple of times. Listen, in the long run, if the insurance companies don't pay, they're going to pay in the end. Society's going to pay. So, all right, that's my whole shtick. All right. With the judge today, and the reason why Judge Eisenberg is here is because Monica –
I can't believe she's here.
Wait a minute. I got to say her last name. Hold it.
Pa.
Pa Corny is here. Pa Corny.
Which is amazing.
And we are so happy you're here. And is it okay to say that you're
– Yeah.
And absolutely. You're in recovery. I guess this was the wrong time to ask you that. recovery, that's what I said. So let me ask you a question. How did you get involved with Judge Eisenberg?
I've worked for Montgomery County for over 16 years.
Okay.
And I switched from one of the supporting offices to a court position, and I interviewed with him, and he realized right away I was the perfect person for the job.
Of course.
He's very smart, we know.
Yeah, we know that.
There's some truth in that.
What do you do? What is your title in Eisenberg's Judge Eisenberg's court?
A court clerk.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
So he has a few people that support him in different ways.
Yeah.
So some outside of the office, some legally, and then I'm kind of like the person that supports him in the actual courtroom.
You're in the courtroom
when it's going on.
Yeah,
and there's another, I'm going to say their names, Virginia, Amanda, and Karen. We all support him. And he has people like the All Rise.
Yeah. Do you say that?
No, that's
– Well, she does sometimes, but she can never get it right.
I always mess it up. But so we have the real people who are supposed to do it. They work every other month, and that's John and Harvey.
All Rise.
So that's Judge Eisenberg's team. So my job is to support him actually in the courtroom.
In which ways?
I make sure that all the paperwork that he needs is ready. I do very simple orders, but – Amanda, his law clerk, does all the real smart people orders.
Are there usually police or sheriff in the courtroom?
We have
depending
sheriffs.
On the case, I guess.
Most of the time, we have deputy sheriffs in the courtroom, which is very nice to have them there.
Well, it's comforting, right?
It is very comforting to know that they're there. They are very helpful,
right?
And what else do I do?
Monica's being very modest with you,
or
she's called in the courtroom MP.
MP,
which. Just her initials because it flows
MP. Sounds very police-like, MP.
But she's being very modest. I mean, she really runs the courtroom. Everything goes through her. If there's either in criminal for years when we were there together or when we did family cases or when we did PFA cases, you're having a lot of people coming in, and she is the face of the court with the public.
Okay.
And she organizes everything. She tells me when stuff's ready. She makes sure that both sides have their witnesses to go.
Wow.
And, I mean, and no matter what happens, no matter what cases we hear, no matter who we deal with, they all say the same thing. We love Monica. We love Monica. She does an unbelievable job. I mean, Monica is always so cheery and bright. And, I mean, for a lot of people, remember, when they come into a court, it's at their worst. They don't want to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, I see it every day when people testify and you can see them
shaking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
From where they are. So to have – and look, I mean, I've gone into hundreds of courtrooms in my life throughout this state. And a lot of times when you walked in, the person greeting you was not happy to greet you.
Yeah.
And you can only imagine how much easier it is to be in the courtroom. or to have to deal with somebody or have people find out about your most intimate issues of your life, but at least have a smiling face say good morning.
Yeah.
And that's what she does.
Yeah.
And it's really an amazing thing that she does.
Was it hard for you to tell Judge Eisenberg that you were in recovery? Was that a period of time where you didn't know how he would react?
It was a bit scary because I was there one day and then I wasn't. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this.
I mean, what your story is going to be.
Yeah, I'm just going to come back and what am I going to say? Mm-hmm. So I one day in rehab, I was in the shower and I said, I'm just telling everybody. I'm just going to tell everybody. So at the time, my husband also worked for Montgomery County, and I asked him to talk to the stenographer, Karen, mm-hmm. and just say, could you tell everyone? So it was a little bit easier when I knew that I was going to walk in and everybody was going to know. So I just kind of walked in. And I was like, I'm back.
Judge, how did you take it?
I took it as Monica dealing with what she had to deal with. And you know what? I mean, I think that was wonderful.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, we all have issues, and, you know, if they're getting out of control, the worst thing you can do is try to hide it. You've got to go. You've got to deal with it. And if you deal with it and you move on and people don't accept it, you know, that's on them.
That's exactly right. I
thought everybody should praise her for that. And, you know, like a lot of things in life and mental health and in some ways addiction, you know, they've become issues of shame. And they shouldn't be shameful. You know what? That if someone has the problem, we should look at it and say, you know, what can we do to help? And shaming somebody for their addiction is not the right way to handle it. And it was like she came back, and I don't know because I wasn't in her shoes, but I can pretty much guarantee you the way she and I interact from the day she left, she was gone, she came back, it did not change.
That's beautiful, and that says a lot about your boss, the judge. And, you know, you have to wonder, when somebody takes an attitude of it's a negative, you went to rehab, what is really going on in them has nothing to do with you. You know, their insecurities, their fears. You know, I remember when I got clean, there were people – I think it made people very uncomfortable who I used to be around when they found out I was no longer involved in that kind of activity.
Right. No, the judge and the whole team, everybody was extremely supportive. Very, very – it was great. And then we would be able to talk about it in front of other people by calling it camp. So that was – if something happened when I was away, it was like, oh, you were at camp the time. So it was – we were able to talk about it openly and still keep it, you know.
And what I would say to somebody who has that, they should – I mean – Monica should be the example you use where she wasn't embarrassed. I mean, look, I wasn't inside her head, but she wasn't embarrassed by it. And, you know, like a lot of things, we take from what the person is giving us. And she was not embarrassed about it. She was not embarrassed to talk about it. It wasn't shameful or something to hide. And when you do that, then everybody's like, okay, good. You got better.
Yeah.
We should all get better.
Yeah. You know, that's like you're really giving back right when you got back. You're giving back to the recovery community when they see someone like you who has overcome, has dealt with their issues, and you're back. And you're back in the swing of things. And that's what this whole recovery is about, is really to get back into life.
And I think it made me a better person overall because I was able to work on myself, not only with the problem with drinking, it's with the other problems I had. And as Judge Eisenberg said, I was always friendly, but I was able to work on myself as a person and be even more friendly and more positive and more open to other people's problems, where if someone came to me with negativity, I'd say, well, why? Maybe because they have these charges against them, or, you know, their life's maybe not so great right now, or maybe they're going through something. Mm-hmm. So if they're coming to me with negativity, I'd stop and think, okay, it's not me they're angry with. And I could see that now. So it has nothing to do with me. Learned that.
It's great quality.
Through, you know, becoming a better person.
Yeah. Let's take a roll call real quick, all right? There's a lot of people here. We'll try to get some. Laura Story, Bob Miller, Larry Wing, Debbie Reynolds, Michael Shoemaker from Tennessee, Bob Moeller, Friday PM with Sober Radio. Have a good one. Mike Hepp, what's going on, boys?
Now, Mike.
Linda Carroll is watching. Happy Friday. Kathy Wolf Collin. Bernard Adelsberger. Hey, Bernie. Laura Story says, jails, institutions, and death. So happy I don't live in the fear of this anymore. Another week of clean and sober radio. Judge Andrea Duffy. Hello to the judge and to Mark and Gary. Now we're second fiddle. You know that?
We are second fiddle.
We are today, okay? Let me see who else is
in. I get it.
Jeff Phillips. Mark Willig. Mark Smith. All right, we'll get back to everybody. All right.
And, you know, your daughter says you guys aren't matching this week. What's going on?
Who, my daughter Sophie?
Yes, because we dress the same for some reason. We don't
know
each
and I.
Other.
We actually
really?
Do.
We coordinate. We try to coordinate every day.
Really?
Colors.
That's good. That's that nice. Means there's a connection that's unconscious.
Strange. strange connection.
I think if you came in, you would say strange. But, yeah. But it works. It works.
It works. You guys, I'll tell you something. I never want to come into your courtroom except as an observer. But if I get if Mark gets charged with something, I hope he's in front of you guys.
Oh my gosh, that would. I just never want to be in a court again, ever.
Well, and that that's something you say, and I was touching on it earlier, and this is the importance of somebody like Monica.
Yeah.
Is the, you know, if there's a lot of tension in a courtroom from coming from the people who are working in the courtroom. Can you imagine what that's like for everybody else who comes into a court?
That raises the anxiety levels.
So what I try to do is and not that it's there all that much, but just kind of bring the tension down. There's nothing wrong with a little levity every once in a while. I take my job very, very, very seriously. I don't always take myself very seriously. If I mess up, I don't get mad if somebody sitting to my left points it out to me in
right,
front of the
right.
whole court, because I think things like that make for, sometimes good to cut the tension, especially in some of these courtrooms where, you know, there's a really serious stuff going on. And it really helps when you have great people who are around you.
That's a great tribute to you. You know that?
It is. And he's being a bit modest because, and he said it before, his attitude allows us to have
sure.
our attitudes.
Sure.
So, you know, he is the leader of the courtroom.
Sure.
And it allows us to have the, what's the word I'm looking for?
The ability to be
themselves.
And
yeah.
Calm the volumes turned down with you guys.
Right. And it's also like, all right, it's playtime's over. Let's go. And serious times
yeah.
start. So
yeah.
With him allowing us to have that not laid back. God, I'm so bad at words. This is not a confident word.
Well, I mean, it's
let me ask you a question. I'll break the tension right now. Let me ask you a question. You ever in the courtroom? I don't want the judge to hear this. But you ever in the courtroom and you thought, maybe that wasn't the right decision?
For him?
I'd like to hear that, Monica.
No.
Good.
No.
Good answer.
I call him Rain Man because he's so smart. Oh. Every time he
wait,
does
Rain Man, wait a minute. Rain Man was a savant.
No, that's how he is.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
He's smart, but a savant's a little different.
So he'll say things, somebody will say, like, this happened on this date, and it's 3 years ago. And he's like, that's a Wednesday.
Oh, okay. I know somebody who can do that, too.
And I'll say, yeah. I'm a very good driver. That's what I'll say. When he says things like that, I'm like,
we're going to have to withdraw everything we said about Monica here.
But he's really smart.
I know he is.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever have emergencies in the courtroom?
You mean violence?
I mean, stuff like that has happened, but it's rare. I mean, it's very rare. We had somebody got sick and fell in the courtroom, things like that. But mm-hmm. for the most part, no. Everybody's pretty well behaved, I would say.
The guys
really?
With the guns calm things down
yeah.
a lot.
The what does?
The guys with the guns, they kind of... They're a little bit formidable.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's such a feeling of, I just remember going before a judge and they're sitting up high.
They're like pharmacists in a way.
Okay. And you're just down there like just, it's a very vulnerable feeling.
Well, that's why it's done like
absolutely.
That, right, Judge?
I mean, I didn't design it, but yeah.
yeah. You feel very vulnerable.
I mean, they got the black robe on, you're up there, you're addressed in a certain way, you're treated with respect.
Yeah, definitely.
But the court system works, and that's the great
thing
work. About it. It does.
Nothing is a perfect system.
Sure, but
It works.
It works.
You know. So, all right. So you're involved with a lot of different kinds of legal stuff. But one of them, which was very interesting to me, were veterans with addictions. And when I hear that, I was like, oh God, you got to take care of these people.
Absolutely.
Is it different when you're dealing with a veteran as opposed to dealing with, let's say Mark and I are addicted? Do you feel a difference? I know you have to be fair, but these guys with what they went through, there's a reason, a real concrete reason why most of them probably go on the drugs, trauma. I mean,
it's drugs. They also have some mental health issues that they're dealing with because of their service.
Yes.
It is different when you deal with these guys, because when you hear some of the stories about what these men and women went through.
Yeah.
And I look at it this way, that how can we thank them for the service that they gave to this country? And it's by giving them the treatment that they need to be able to become productive members of society.
Yeah.
And that's what I always say to them. I mean, I've done Veterans Treatment Court twice. I did it back in 2017, and then I took it back over in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the most rewarding stuff I have done as a judge is seeing how well these men and women do in the program. Because what I tell them early on is true. The program works, but they have to be committed to it. And that means a lot of having your urine tested and a lot of checking in and going to a lot of therapy sessions to deal with whatever issues they're dealing with. And a lot of it's VA connected. So if you live in Lansdale, you've got two choices, Coatesville or Philadelphia. So you have to go far. Now, there are some providers outside of that area, but for a lot of them, I mean, it's a lot to do.
Yeah.
And some people might look at it this way. I can do 24 months of probation, try to walk it off, or I can commit to the program, get the treatment I need, and then move on. And I think that's something that we do owe to veterans for the service that they have given to this country.
Absolutely. You know, I hear a lot of, a drug court, regular drug court, which is all over the country. It's not an easy not an easy go, but the ones who are really committed, it's a life changer. But, I always think some of these people, they don't have the means. They don't have the transportation. They don't have the cars. How do they get – the ones that are committed to this really want it. And it's such a great opportunity that the legal system is providing this kind of stuff, because, Judge, 20 years ago, there was no drug court. It was incarceration or probation, right?
Right. It was the vicious cycle of, you're going to get arrested for drugs. You're going to get put on probation. You're going to have hot urine, or you're going to get arrested again for probation. Then you're going to go in and you're going to be hit with a gag non-violation, and then you're just going to keep coming around and around and around. When these people were addicts. And look, these programs are not easy. I mean, in Montgomery County, we have drug court. We have behavioral health court for people who have serious mental health issues, which the system was really not – had the ability to deal with 20 years ago. And I think over time, we're going to realize, following evidence-based practices and following them, we're going to realize that if we can help these people, they're not going to then come back into the system.
Right.
And that's the goal.
Yeah.
And the programs are expanding. Montgomery County started with another county, the Targeted Opioid Phase Court, which was really, only for opiates, but people from the time of their arrest. Usually if you wanted to get into drug court or Veterans Treatment Court or Behavioral Health Court, it's not until 6 months after you're arrested. Well, what's happening in those 6 months? But there was a program which is still going on in Montgomery County. Monica, I was the judge assigned. Monica worked with me on it the first 2 years of the program. Every day, these people would come in and see a judge. Every day.
That's a big commitment.
And, I mean, the pandemic got in the way. I think they're doing it on Zoom now because I'm not still involved with it. But every single day, that way they knew to stay on top of it, face that this was successful. And the years we were there, it was successful because I look at it this way, simply as one thing. I don't know about hot urines, things like that. I know nobody died. And that's the way I looked at it.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So if you just joined us, we're talking with Judge Todd Eisenberg, Common Pleas Judge outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And we are also talking with Monica Pokorny, who is plays an integral part in the judge's courtroom. And so, listen, when we come back, if you have any questions, give us a call, 1-888-329-3306, and we'll find out a little bit more about what it's like to be a judge. Very interesting. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care, backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF now. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Hi, this is Bobby Rydell, and you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, we're talking with Judge Todd Eisenberg, Common Pleas Court Judge. That's a big deal, okay? You got to graduate high school, college, and you definitely have to go to law school. But there is one kind of judge in the state of Pennsylvania where you do not have to be a lawyer, and that is a district justice.
Correct.
And you and I
should do it. I could see you, Gary. That would be really cool.
Here's what I would be. Somebody who I couldn't stand, I'd nail them. But the rest of the people, I'd feel so bad for them that I would.
That's got to be.
Got to leave. You know, that's what I would.
I'm wondering, like, what it's like where sometimes there's these mandatory minimum sentences.
We don't. For the most part, they're gone.
Oh, good.
They are, but for the most part, they're gone. In drug cases, they're gone. When I was a young lawyer, they were there. Where a lot of times, you know, I think it was 2 grams of cocaine. A gram is what? Like a packet of Sweet and Low is a gram?
We have no idea.
So.
I'd say that's about right.
Mark might know. I have no idea.
But, I mean, then people, kids were young. Yeah. I mean, they were adults, but young adults were getting caught with 2.5 grams and going away to 1 to 2, 2 to 4. If it was your second, it was 2 to 4. But most of the mandatory sentences when it comes to drugs are no longer in a.
You know, we've brought this up before. I don't know if you know. I received a presidential pardon from the last president. And I often said I would have given that up to let some of these poor souls who have been incarcerated for years, if not decades, out for minor drug charges. That's the issue I have with the legal system. I can't imagine. I can't imagine it. You know, it's a rough thing. Mm-hmm. But you know what? You make a mistake, you pay. And sometimes you pay too hard.
Now, do you – like, I know that there's guidance given. Are there ever times, like, as a judge where you see the guidance and you're like, this is just way too much to give somebody for a drug offense? And are you able to go way below the guidance, or do you have to go along with it?
So there are sentencing guidelines in Pennsylvania which, based on – the crime you have committed and convicted of, and what's called your prior record score, meaning your prior convictions, there's then a guideline. They're just guidelines. I don't have to follow them. Each and every sentencing I do, and as I don't know if I did state before, but I'm not handling criminal cases currently. I look at the guidelines, but I look at the total picture when I fashion a sentence. And I think just about every judge does that, where you look at, okay, well, the prior record score, when were the crimes committed? Were they committed 25 years ago? Because a lot of times they don't go away. Yeah. is the person a productive member of society? Yeah. Do they have kids? I mean, everything comes into account. The guidelines are just one part of the decision-making process. When
do you get a lot of pressure from the district attorney's office on cases?
No.
They know you have the – they present the case and then it's up to you, right? Is that basically how it is?
Correct. This might be for Monica, but 90-something percent of the guilty for – I'm not just talking about guilty pleas.
Yeah.
They're agreeing to what the sentence are, the defense and the prosecution. So all I'm doing is accepting the sentence. As the judge, I have the right that if I am so offended by the agreement, I can decide not to accept it.
Oh.
In the 4-plus years I sat as a criminal judge, I never did that once. I always accepted it because I believe there was a reason between why the two parties came to it. Or there was no case that was so offensive that I didn't. But no, the prosecutor makes their argument, the defense makes their argument, and then as the independent judge, I make the decision on what I think is fair and just.
Were you able to overrule a jury? Can a judge overrule a jury's decision?
You can, but I have never done that. I mean, in Montgomery County, I don't know if in every county, but in Montgomery County, when jurors come in, a judge when they're brought in every day, comes down and greets them. And it's something that most of the judges do, and I really enjoy doing it. I did it for the first time in 2 years, about a week ago. And when I go down there, I always say to them, you know, I thank them for coming. And I say, and I'm not kidding with them, I say, this is the most important civic duty we have, and then I usually catch myself and say it's one, and it's right there with voting.
Yeah, right.
So voting and jury duty are the two most important civic duties we have, and the drafters of the Constitution had it right. You know, 12 people, you can have less in a civil case, but for a criminal case, 12 people have to make the determination of your guilt or innocence. And why? Because it shouldn't be easy to convict somebody.
Right.
You know, if you're going to charge them with it, they should present evidence. So I have the utmost respect for the jury system. And I got to tell you, the cases I've seen, the jury gets it right. They get it right.
Have you ever had a case, like as a public defender, for instance, where you knew the person was definitely innocent and they still got convicted?
It's too long ago for me to even remember. I don't remember that. I don't. I'm sure there were cases where I didn't think that the right decision was made. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that happened.
I have one of our listeners or viewers has a question for you, Judge.
Sure, if I can answer
it. Yeah, if you don't want to, you don't have to.
Sure.
No. Have you – this is for the judge, she says. Have you ever sentenced someone that you've lost sleep over?
There are cases where I sit there and I think a long time about them. But I would say I don't know if I've lost sleep over them, but I generally do a lot of thinking and reflection before I sentence somebody. Because if I'm going to take your liberty away,
yeah,
I have to make sure that I'm doing the right thing there. So,
What a response. You know, you see it every day with the judge. What a responsibility, man. I mean, it's an incredible responsibility, and then it's an incredible career. I mean – I think it's the best being a judge, I think it's the best job in the world.
It's a great job.
It's great.
It is a great job. Well,
do you agree?
She's got the best
Monica?
Job. People ask me all the time, what's it like? And I say, I have the best seat to the greatest show on earth. Because
every day is different, right?
Every day is different. Every day it's a different emotion. Some days you want to cry. Some days you can't stop laughing in your head. These so many different
emotions.
So you
feel the emotions in a courtroom.
We had a situation the other day. It was so sweet. You wouldn't expect that. It was just a wonderful, joyous thing. And I kind of had to walk away a little bit, but I was so happy. And then there's other things that you're angry. And it's really just an amazing thing to see all these things happen.
And how it works. The system, there's so many pieces and parts. And as the judge said, for the most part, it works.
Oh, it does work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it absolutely works. And I'm sorry, Monica.
Jurors, we pick the jury or we eliminate jurors and keep who's left. And they're always usually kind of not real happy in the beginning. And I can't tell you a time when people at the end are like, this is the most amazing thing that ever happened. I'm so glad to see how this all worked. And towards the end, there's really not many people that aren't appreciative to see how the whole thing happened, which is neat to at the end. And everybody's really kind of excited how this whole process worked. Maybe not in a murder case, but the other cases, they're excited that they got picked.
All right. I have two questions. I would love to come in one and observe the courtroom. And will you guys come back?
They are public courtrooms, so you are allowed to come anytime you want for adult court.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. So we've got a yes on both answers.
Well, I don't know. I can't speak for Monica.
Oh, sure. You know what the nice thing was? We didn't see Monica in here today.
I know.
She's right there.
I know. For anybody that listens to this show, this is the famous Monica
Pacorni. All right, guys, thank you so much. And remember, everybody, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
I'm Mark Sigmund.
Thanks for listening. To learn more about this broadcast, please join us on our mission at cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com.
Say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
System.